Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Gillian DeBias, and today we're turning to the silver screen to discuss some of the week's releases. These include the fascinating story of a mysterious writer unmasked by the New York Times called Author, the J.T. Leroy story, the latest misadventure of Matt Damon as Jason Bourne, and some fishy family fun in Disney Pixar's Finding Dory. And our expert today is film critic Karen Krasanovich. Welcome to the show, Karen. Now, we're going to begin with the intriguing documentary Author, the J.T. Leroy Story, which is the tale of a pseudonym that got out of control. Let's hear a clip.
It feels like the whole world is watching.
We're not filming now, right?
Suddenly, I got a call.
This is Warren St. John from the New York Times.
He says, I'm going to get you. He knows everything. There is a huge tornado that's about to hit. All the headlines are saying the biggest literary hoax of our time. It is not a hoax.
A clip from the documentary J.T. Leroy. Now, Karen, who is J.T. Leroy?
Now, for anybody that was aware of the literary scene in the 90s, they will know about this strange boy that appeared that was a very good writer and wrote about how his mother farmed him out to men at truck stops, and how he felt he portrayed himself as a girl, but he was actually a boy, and then he lived homeless. But the writing was very guttural and very real, very raw. It was that sort of era where people were writing their memoirs. And this was actually quite a heartbreaking, moving memoir. People wanted to know who this person was. Now, for a long time, we didn't really see J.T. Leroy. And then, of course, people wanted to see what he looked like. And then he began to appear almost Andy Warhol-like, sort of hiding. And often people would be reading from his writing up on stage, and he would be sitting in the audience with a hat on. So this became a bit strange as things went on. The first novel was called Sarah, and then went on to a publication of his short stories called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. And celebrity admirers like Lou Reed, Tom Waits, Courtney Love, and in fact, Asia Argento turned The Heart is Deceitful into a Cannes premiere film. So you wonder, what's the problem? The problem is J.T. Leroy isn't real.
And so the documentary filmmaker, I gather, gives the real author a chance to tell her story.
Yes, her is very interesting. Laura Albert had been writing as J.T. all along. Now, she has a very interesting personal history, which I'm not going to get into here. But basically, she had an unusual attitude growing up, unusual upbringing. There was abuse, of course, because there usually are in these things. But the fact is that she wrote these as literature, as fiction, and then decided that, well, they're calling it a hoax, but it's almost as if she didn't plan on doing this. She was only trying to figure out how to make it happen.
There are so many people who write under a different name.
Exactly.
I mean,
look
at Rawlings, when she decided to move away from the Harry Potter. So why was there so much furor and media coverage when she was outed?
I think people felt betrayed because back then there was a person represented as J.T. Leroy, and it turned out to be Laura Albert's sister-in-law, who was an androgynous lesbian. I'm not going to even try to explain this very as Feuerzig, and I say his name wrong, says this is the most interesting, amazing story he's ever worked on, and he is famous for The Devil and Daniel Johnson, half Japanese, and also Rocky and the Dude, which is about the real Lebowski. And these are all very detailed. He's worked with the Maisels, so they're very detailed documentaries. But tracking this down, the bifurcation of how J.T. Leroy was presented physically and how people began to relate to him is the real trail here. And he sticks up for Laura Albert, who was labeled a hoaxer and a fraud, saying whatever she did, whatever fibs she told us, however she got the story to us, she did actually write this fiction.
And in a way, I suppose why why so much anger is, you know, it's almost as if the readers and the audiences and the people like Calvin Klein who, you know, bought into this character are just as guilty because they latch on to these kind of, you know, iconic figures so that they can glow in some of their glow. So they're partly at fault as well, perhaps.
Well, we all want to hang on to what's fashionable, what's edgy, to show that we're up to speed with the world. And I think that that's what the J.T. Leroy story is really about. It's not about hoax and trickery. It's really more about invention and how somebody actually really got panicked and thought, oh, okay, what do I do? And I think now it would be, you know, there was a question that I asked the director when I interviewed him for Attitude magazine. Do you think this would happen now with the internet? And he said it would, but it would have been uncovered sooner. I wonder about that because even though we're used to avatars and profiles, you can still hide pretty well.
Interesting. Well, author, the J.T. Leroy story is out now in the UK and will hit American cinemas on September 9th. Now, let's crank things up a little with the latest action-adventure in the Bourne franchise, Jason Bourne. This is the fifth time we meet the former CIA assassin, and it takes place a decade after he went missing at the end of the Bourne ultimatum. Let's have a listen.
We've just been hacked. Could be worse than Snowden.
Facial recognition got a hit.
Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
Why would he come back now?
There's a demonstration in front of the Greek Parliament building. I think she'll use it as cover.
They tracked you. We gotta move.
You're never gonna find any peace. Not till you admit to yourself who you really are.
The trailer for Jason Bourne, directed again by Paul Greengrass. Now, 10 years is a long time. Remind us, was there ambiguity at the end of the last Bourne film about whether there's going to be another sequel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Bourne films that Greengrass made with Damon are the definitive Bourne films. And they're so definitive that James Bond, all the Bond films had to up their game. And of course, they had to up their game as well because of Austin Powers, but we won't go down that route. They're so dark and they're so action-oriented and they're so tight. And Greengrass is such a good director and he works very well with Damon, who's wonderful in this role, that when they went to the fourth installment, they had to switch it to Aaron Cross, who was Jeremy Renner. And even though it was good, it was kind of like, well, wait a minute. You kept expecting Matt Damon to appear in other than a portrait on a table. And that didn't happen. So Matt Damon, everybody goes, oh, they came back for the money. Okay, maybe they did. But he said the fans kept asking him, are you going to come back? And, you know, sometimes I watch the Bourne films because I haven't read the books. And I'm going, wow, action, what's going on?
Yeah,
it's so
quick.
You just think, he's shooting, is that the bad? Okay, he's got a beard, so he's bad. But this one is really crystal clear, which I like. It's sort of like Bourne for Dummies in a way, because you can just come to this and everything's like, this is what happens and this is why and this. Everything's explained and it's beautifully linear.
So distill us the story. Deep breath.
Okay, well, Jason Bourne is in hiding. And his the only character, Nikki, who's Julia Stiles, only character that's been in all of the movies, digs him out and says, I've got information about your father, your late departed father, who wasn't killed in an accident, was not an accident. So he's got to find out the truth about the Treadstone files, which, of course, are hidden in a scary USB stick. They usually are. Meanwhile, Tommy Lee Jones has teamed up with Alicia Vikander, who is now the new, young, fresh CIA, you know, striving woman, to try and catch him. Tommy Lee wants him dead. And Alicia says, no, I'm going to trap him and bring him in alive. And this is what's interesting, the sort of cat and mouse between all those three, with Vincent Cassel deciding that, nope, everybody needs to die. But that's basically it. It's
well done.
Jason, thank you. I can't believe I did it. The film is so clear that you'll get it anyway. You could get some popcorn and come back. But it's so clear, you really feel, and Damon's performance is amazing, but the chase scenes are so good. And the editing is so good, and there's a stunt I have never seen before right toward the end that just I wanted to scream. It was amazing.
Well, the budget was tremendous. Do you see this on the screen?
I think you do. I think you do. Knowing how much chase scenes cost and knowing how much location costs, and also the stunt work is astonishing. I mean, of course, there are a few little niggles like, why didn't she cover up her hair and how did he get the thing in the car? Yeah. You know, but also the lighting is amazing. Tommy Lee Jones looks like the devil. I don't, you know, before he looked like a human. Mm-hmm. Now, what's going on? But it tells a very visual story and it's never boring. It's amazing. It's a really, really good Jason Bourne film.
Well, head to the cinemas, one and all. Jason Bourne is out in cinemas worldwide. Now, finally, we're going to end with a bit of family fun. Finding Dory is the Disney Pixar follow-up to the 2003 film Finding Nemo, which follows our favorite forgetful fish from the first film, embarking on her own adventure to find her family. Here's a clip.
My parents! I remember them!
Wait, what did you remember?
I remember them! My mom, my dad! I have a family! They don't know where I am. Let's go!
Dory,
we have to go!
No! No! This is crazy! Where exactly are you trying to go?
To the gym of the, Baltic?
The Jewel of Morro Bay, California!
Yes!
No, Dory, California's all the way across the ocean.
Then we better get going!
How come every time we're on the edge of this reef, one of us is trying to leave? For once, can't we just enjoy the view?
How can you be talking about the view when I remembered my family?
No, no! We've done our ocean travels. That part of our lives is over. The only reason to travel in the first place is so you don't have to travel ever again.
Yeah, but I wanna...
The delightful sound of Finding Dory. Now, is this as good as Finding Nemo? And what's Dory's journey?
I think it is. I don't have a family and I don't like animation and I hate having fun. So Finding Dory, I thought, oh, I have to see this. But the script is so solid. It's a good story. It's very American. It's very, very American. That's all I can say really about, you know, she keeps losing her memory and her parent fishes are so nice. And, you know, I would swim away from that child personally if I was a fish. But the story is that Dory gets caught in a current and gets torn away from her parents, Jenny and Charles. And one of them is Diane Keaton for her voice. And runs into, and this is how she ends up with Nemo and his father. The father's Albert Brooks. And they have to catch a ride on a turtle to get back and find it. And what they go through to try and find her parents is a wonderful, wonderful adventure full of creativity, innovation, and surprises. And it was really good. The animation's terrific. The ideas are brilliant. Andrew Stanton and Angus McLean wrote a wonderful, wonderful script, and it really holds together. You've got Idris Elba and Dominic West, hilarious as two domineering sea lions. Really very, very funny. All these really rough English voices just suddenly appear. And it's delightful. It's pacey. The music is amazing. Sia does the final, she does a version of Unforgettable at the end. And it's really fun. And Ellen DeGeneres is perfect.
Well, I was going to sort of zoom in on that because I gather Ellen DeGeneres voices Dory. Mm. Recognizably so.
Very much so. You can tell it's her.
A little really blue can. Fish.
She's a regal blue tang. That's the name of the fish. That's the name of the fish. But it's really interesting. You learn about echolocation. You learn about whales. You learn a lot about the fish and about where they're going and how they live.
So a little theme, I gather. Dory, a disability theme that comes through. I've been reading about.
It's basically no matter how... I don't want to say disabled, but no matter how forgetful you might be or no matter how weak you might be in certain points, you will have your strengths. And Dory does have her strengths, and she begins to use forgetfulness to her benefit, which, and it's quite interesting. It's tenuous, but it works.
Pixar films, the animation has tended to, no matter how inventive, there's been a certain look to some of the animation. Yeah. Is this the same in this case, or does the animation, are there some sort of visual surprises and difference to the style?
As we expect from Pixar, there's a lot of surprises visually. I mean, for example, there's an octopus who is like a chameleon, and he just disappears, and it's wonderful to see how creative they get with his character. It's very friendly. Some children under 10 are finding it frightening because there can be some scary stuff there. There's a lot of water. And there's also a pollution theme. But it's really, really solid Pixar. It's done very well in China, as you would expect. But this is a real winner. And basically, really, it's because the story does what it needs to do.
Well, The Weeknd is on, so go search out Finding Dory, which is in cinemas around the world. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Karen Krasanovich. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday when we'll take a look at the week ahead in art. But for now, thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.